for some time, and I guess the one thing I have thought we've always came up short on was asset preservation. In higher ed, it's called KEEPER. And this year, I thought I would like to spend quite a bit of money on asset preservation, particularly when we found that we were going to have a fair amount of one-time money, because I thought some of that one-time money could be used for asset preservation. Today we have higher education, the U, and Minsky. They have their requests. I did go over the governor's capital budget, and I went over it several times, and I didn't find higher ed. So
2 minutes.
I don't know. Apparently there's another page coming or something. But it appears he's at zero for both. So we will listen to, first of all, the university for their request, and then Minsky. So, university, go ahead.
I think it's warm in here. Go, please. Not particularly.
That's a good way to hash it out.
Almost ready.
Ms. Newbies.
See, Tomasoni.
It's smart.
Read this.
No, go ahead. Smart. What is it?
Are you on the, I think you're across to me, Yvonne.
David, you're over here.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity today to come and talk to you about our capital request. I'm here today with, and I'm going to tag team with Dr. Frank Serra and myself. I'm Richard Fitzenreiter, the Chief Financial Officer at the University of Minnesota. And I do want to acknowledge that Regent Steve Hunter is here with us as well today. I'd like to just start with the first slide on our HEPR request. And as some of you may recall, and in case you don't, I'll take this chance to remind you that last year the university came forward with an $80 million HEPR request. And we were very grateful, I'll admit, slightly disappointed. We did come out of the session last year with $30 million of our $80 million request. Which obviously isn't what we needed, but we're doing the best to spend that now. And as we thought about this coming session, we decided it was important to bring back our HEPR request again, but with a very specific and more narrow focus, because we realized that in all likelihood, this being an off-budget, off-capital budget year, that we should make sure that our request is rather modest and focused on what we consider very important emergencies. So with that in mind, we put our HEPR request really into three improvement categories, things relating to health and safety, in other words, projects that we felt had an imminent risk to the health and safety of the building occupants, issues of water infiltration. As you know, we have a lot of brick and cement, and there are water infiltration problems where we actually have situations where water is currently entering buildings and causing further damage behind the brick, behind the face of the buildings, to the interior building envelope and the structure itself. And then also really critical building system projects, repair and replacement of building systems that either are about to fail or are going to fail probably within the next year. Examples of projects in those categories include, for example, the Sahlstrom Conference Center at Crookston, where we have some structural issues. Again, the structure isn't going to fall down, but we have issues of water infiltration behind the walls. There are issues similar to that at Morris, at the Student Center, at Camden Hall and Bemler Hall. At Duluth, in a research lab building, we need to put in some fire alarms, do some exterior wall repairs, and improve a pedestrian bridge on the Twin Cities campus. You may not realize it when you come on a tour, but in many cases you're walking on a plaza that's actually a roof over an underground part of the campus, and we're experiencing, for example, over in the MCB Plaza over by Moose Building, Moose Tower, substantial water infiltration into classrooms that we need to repair. The second slide here shows you the request by campus. It is a $22 million request. $8.3 million of that request falls into health and safety projects, $9.2 of it into water infiltration, and $4.4 into building systems. We consider these very high priority critical needs at this point, and really hope that you can find in your capital budget deliberations some funds to help us out on these issues. In addition to this request, we also have a request relating to our Biosciences Facilities Authority, and I'd like to turn that brief discussion over to Dr. Sarah.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I think what we're really talking about today is the future of biosciences in the state of Minnesota, the future of our health biosciences, our agricultural biosciences, the green industry, future of biofuels, and the future of agriculture in the state of Minnesota. The university drives that engine through its discovery and its relationships with the university. And I think what's at stake is that we don't become a flyby state. So when we think about why we need this biomedical facilities as authority, we really think about three things: predictability, competition, and process. Predictability has a lot for us in the area of being a talent magnet for the people who perform research. Those top shelf faculty today exist in a seller's market. It's highly competitive with our peer institutions, and when we do that, we think about UCLA, UCSF, Wisconsin, Michigan, and the like. We need to be able to show them the space that they will be recruited into and that space meets today's research standards. This last recruit we did to try and do something to develop the pharmaceutical industry in Minnesota took us 3 years to complete the recruitment. The second key piece is competition. Our peer groups are not standing still. And I'll give you some examples. UCLA, building 4 new research buildings, nearly completely constructed. University of Michigan, almost 500,000 square feet of new biosciences research space. University of Wisconsin, 200,000 square feet interdisciplinary research complex, another $350 million for discovery. University of San Francisco, 2.65 million square feet for biomedical research. Those are the people we compete with. If we stand still, they move forward, the state loses, the university loses. The third is process. The current process for this kind of investment really doesn't work very well if you think about the long-term planning aspects that we need to do to plan where this research is and how we recruit into it. It puts a very expensive, unique building, frequently, as you know, $70, $80, $90 million, in the middle of the university's bonding request, and it doesn't fit very well when the average bonding allocations are in the $5, $6, $7 million range. So what's to lose if we don't do this? What is our future? Here's a Will Rogers quote. Even if you're on the right track, you'll get run over if you just sit there. I like that. I thought it was really a good one. And it's almost as good as we don't want to be a flyover state. But we're well positioned right now. In fact, we're uniquely positioned among the national leaders. What we want to do as a research university is do what research universities do, which is stimulate and grow the economy of the state. To do that, we need a long-term investment strategy, and we need to make the investment now, because that's what drives the economic future of the state of Minnesota. This is what the Biomedical Facilities Authority consists of.
Mr. Chairman, members, what we're asking for in the Biomedical Facilities Authority relates, again, as Dr. Sarah said, to our ability to plan in a thoughtful manner. The bill itself that we're supporting calls for the state to authorize $279 million worth of state GO debt that the university would match at a 10% contribution. So the total pool of dollars to advance this goal would be $310 million. The legislation itself sets up an authority, charges that authority to accept applications for grants from the University of Minnesota, sets up a biomedical facilities authority, the purpose of it, outlines criteria that the university needs to meet in making an application for funds, tells that authority if we meet it to approve a grant, and then stages those grants according to the schedule you see here so that the university can plan on a logical set schedule, roughly a project every 2 years, so that we can meet this long-term goal of supporting the state's biomedical biosciences industries. We have one project here that comes immediately, and it is a project at 717 Delaware, which we were fortunate enough to acquire from the state of Minnesota. That's the old public health building on the university campus, and we now are here as part of that effort to bring a project forward that'll meet some of the needs, and I want to have Dr. Sarah describe that particular project to you.
This request is not about the buildings. It's about what goes on inside those buildings and the research faculty who work there to develop those new cures and preventions. We're looking at this 717, and I'm going to show you a slide just on that in a second, but I thought you might want to know what we're going to do with the other facilities. One is right now we have the world's best imaging center. We need to upgrade it because Harvard's on our heels. And that's really the second request, to upgrade that. If you're interested in magnets, this is a 16 Tesla magnet, where Tesla is one Earth magnetic field. It will allow you to look inside a brain, for instance, without going in there. And you can actually look at cells and what they're doing. And if you're doing neurobehavioral research or those kinds of things, it's a critical success factor. We are the world leader, and we'd like to stay that way. We'll also be looking at cancer, cardiovascular disease, emerging infections and food safety, and infectious disease, and other metabolic disorders such as diabetes. Each one of these facilities will house 20 principal investigators, 120 supporting researchers, and should generate $20 to $25 million of new sponsored project research. Now, the first one we talked about is 717 Delaware. And there's a reason this is here now and some urgency in it. And the basis for that goes to what is happening now with our principal funder, which is the National Institutes of Health. But I need to give you the context for what they're doing. If you're in health sciences, what's important about research to us is not just the discovery of new knowledge, but how do we use that knowledge to prevent or treat disease? So we must create, whether it's new pills, new devices, better care delivery systems, more accountability, we need to take that knowledge and apply it. What the NIH has said in the last 2 years is that's important. We're glad they agree with us, and we think it is important. And they're now putting a lot of money into the development of clinical research and clinical trials. So for us to compete, we're putting in a grant. It'll be a $30 to $40 million grant. That's what these runs. And what we've done in 717 Delaware, we need to remodel this to bring together all the services you need to do that kind of work in a way that's a lot better than we do now. We run about 200 clinical trials on any given day. This will get us up to where we need to be a national leader, which is about 500. It brings the statisticians, the study designers, and the people who have special skills that you need to design and run successfully and complete, so that whatever you're working can pass the muster for the FDA approval process. And that's what this does. Right now, it's scattered all over the place. We can make an efficient, streamlined service that will leverage our existing strengths and allow us to get this grant in and move ahead. And that's really what this is about. the 717 Delaware. There will be other things in there that support this, such as neurobehavioral development, chemical screening for new drugs, epilepsy research, but the core of it is really the service structure that we can actually run clinical research and clinical trials in a much better way than we do now. And that summarizes our presentation. I think Fitz and I would be happy to answer any questions you might have.
I would say if there was only one project we could do this session, this one would be it. I really don't quite understand the governor not going with it, because Minnesota is really, the university is really out on the cutting edge of, in a lot of these areas, diabetes and Alzheimer's and so on. And so this one is definitely going to be in the bill. But
Mr. Chairman and members, the Higher Ed Committee did a field trip to the university, and during our field trip, we met with one of the top researchers in stem cell research, and she said that she basically was recruited to come, I believe, from Berkeley, because of the facility and the ability, the layout of the facility, the way that she could work with co-scientists, co-researchers in a very convenient way, instead of having co-researchers spread throughout the campus, which I guess was the situation she came from. So I do think it is very important, the design of these buildings and the ability of these researchers to work together.
It may be a little confusing to some of you just on this committee for the first time, but this long list of buildings that they're talking about was in another bill last year and did pass the Senate. I didn't even request that it come to my committee because I figured it was strong support for it. It did not pass the House. So we'll have to see how we do on that this year. But this committee will not make the decision on that. We will make the decision whether to go with that $16.2 million. And then I guess the bill is in your committee, isn't it?
It's in finance.
Yeah. But I expect at some time there's going to be a decision made whether that passes into law. But we will be dealing with the $16.2 million
in this committee. And the HEPR.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dr. Sarah, you mentioned that you could bring in a lot of grant money with the new facilities and the new staff that you're hoping to have. And I'm on higher ed also, and I'm just wondering, would you be able to pretty much fund the operations of a new facility without coming back to us for additional dollars, or what would you be looking at?
The way, Chair Lanseth, Senator, the way the bill is constructed, the operating costs are covered. So the answer would be yes, and Fitz can give you a better explanation than that. I should also point out something else.
Bigger committee.
We've learned a lot on how to design buildings to support science. So if I compare where we are today to where we were 7 or 8 years ago, I've been around that long, it's a long time now, we are giving space for each PI that's about half of what we did 8 years ago for 30 to 40% more productivity, more research performed. And that has a lot to do with where Senator Pappas was about how you design the space, how people interact with each other, how the hoods are put in, and things like that. So we've become more efficient, and built into the design of the bill is the operating cost.
Senator Stump.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I had just a question about the couple questions, actually. One was the request last year, was that for the same amount that the request, the overall request this year? For some odd reason, I thought the request last year was like $500 million.
Oh, you mean for the whole?
Yeah, for the series of science.
Mr. Chairman, members, the Biomedical Sciences Facilities Authority last year was a $330 million package. This year it's smaller because you did, in the bonding bill, pass the first one of the first buildings. You did address one of them.
Now, it appears that the total number is up, though, so you must be figuring on cost increases of
buildings. Mr. Chairman, members, that's correct. Inflation for construction is running faster than we had hoped and faster than was publicized, and the numbers we used were from the Department of Administration at the time.
Okay. All right, I was mistaken on that. For some reason, I thought university usually doesn't come in and ask for less. They usually come in and ask for more, and somehow I had my numbers turned around. But I do have a question that was a number of us were visiting about this morning, and I know, Dr. Sarah, you're very interested in this too, is how do we create the economic activity around the state? I guess I'll just state it. When the synergism of economic or an academic and economic activity is so centrally located down here, how do we get that out kind of to the rest of the state? Like the university has campuses in other regions and stuff, but is there a way to allow some of this scientific research that's maybe second or third step, not the basic research, but the kind of the practical, kind of putting it into the practical realm? Is there a way of doing that versus keeping everybody down here in the cities? We have clean air out there and lots of.
Go ahead. Mr. Chair, Senator Stumpf, I would say clean air and good wine. Which are two essential qualities of life. I think your question is a core question, and my first answer is we must accomplish that, or we will not achieve our goal of becoming a biosciences force in the United States and the world. This can't be just Twin Cities. So what's happening is there are a series of discussions happening with cities, with economic development groups, with Minsky, with us, about, okay, once this engine starts moving stuff out, and we've done our part, and the business community is now picking this up as new startups or new intellectual property in the state of Minnesota, how do we move that out and capture these biobiz zones, regional economic groups, the strengths that are not just there in the campuses of the university, but I think in a broader way, the campuses of Minsky. And that's important not just from moving the technology out, but that partnership between these two higher education systems is going to absolutely be required to meet the workforce needs. If you sit down and you start calculating the workforce requirements, they occur at all levels of kinds of jobs. We only do one piece of that, fundamentally, and Minsky does most of it, and we're in the process now of trying to figure out how do we work together with the regional economic development groups to move this technology out, particularly, as you mentioned, with second and third order development. We don't have all of that worked out, but there is a very good group of people now who are talking about it, thinking about it, and who are well engaged.
Okay, thank you.
I think I was talking to former Senator Bob Kierlin, and he said he thought that the biomedical research the spinoff would be a tremendous number of small businesses in connection with it, and so the result certainly could be that it would get spread out into the smaller communities as well. So, okay, Senator Fredrickson. Senator Kublai.
Just a couple of questions. I guess there are a couple of us wondering what this column on the percent authorized is on. You didn't really talk about that column. And then I did have another question, too, but if you want to take that one first.
Mr. Chairman, Senators, the percent authorized is tied to the actual way the mechanics of the legislation works. in order to ensure that it's really a finance department university collaboration, in order to ensure that only so many bonds are actually authorized by the authority. In the bill, there's limits as to what percentage of the total can be authorized by the authority, and that percentage there ties to each of the buildings happening on about a two-year time frame. So it's just a way to that the bill's constructed.
So the request then takes that figure into consideration, I assume.
Yes.
Okay. Well, I think, you know, it sounds like this could be a pretty serious contributor to the economic viability of the state, how well the state does economically. Have you done any kinds of projections on what this might produce over a span of time, say over a, you know, 5 or 10 year period, you know, with some of those other pieces that Senator Langseth mentioned, I guess?
Mr. Chair, Senator Kubley, short answer is we haven't done, I think, a complete economic analysis at this time. We have worked with several of the applied economists to look at pieces of it, and you've seen one of those in the University Mayo partnership. And I think we could only expect, as you increase the size of that investment, we should see more of that. But we haven't actually done the big economic development piece. I am in discussion with an applied economist at the university right now to actually do that. It's not a simple study to do, but I think it does need to be done to answer the kind of question that you've asked. Just on the University Mayo partnership, that first $4 million of investment, two from the state, one from the university, one from Mayo, 3 years later has returned about $25 million of new money, some from NIH, some from private donors, new jobs, those kinds of things, and you'll hear a much more complete report about that. In many ways, that partnership was a pilot project to see if, in fact, we could actually make something like this happening, and I think it is. The last comment is the BioBusiness Alliance is putting together a plan. It's called Minnesota 2025. And that should be out by the end of this year, which lays out, I hesitate to use the word, but kind of a blueprint for what needs to happen over the next few years. And it fits in with what I was responding to Senator Stumpf and how do we spread this university-wide, what's the role of the private sector investment. And that is what happens once you get beyond the university's engine beginning to produce the technology. So I hope over the course of the next year we pull more of that data together and have it ready for you.
Just one follow-up, Mr. Chair. It sounds as though when you're talking about the University Mayo partnership that you're just talking about the dollars that have come into the state as a result of that investment.
Correct.
As opposed to what the total economic impact
Correct.
Of those dollars would be. And I understand that there's a good deal of ambiguity in your ability to answer the question, I think you have addressed it, but even though in kind of non-specific terms, but maybe that's the best we can do at this point. Is that what you're saying?
I think so, until we produce some more detailed information, some different levels down. On its face, if there's $100 million of new NIH money here, the latest NIH figure, and this is beyond Zone 1, it includes Zone 2 and 3 and 4 that you were talking about,
mm-hmm.
It produces about 33 new jobs per $1 million. So you can begin to see that. As you know, most new jobs come from small startup companies, mm-hmm. And that's what this is designed to do. And what's happening nationally now is investor money, going beyond just venture money, is beginning to see what's going on in Minnesota, that the private sector and the public sector are really beginning to work together to make Minnesota the biosciences place to go in the Midwest. And they're beginning to develop a much higher level of interest in how they can make those kind of investments. So I think we're in the beginning of this process, but it can't develop unless the engine is working.
So one more question, Mr. Chair. So the university then is also doing some things on the undergraduate and graduate level so that we can produce the kinds of talent that would be needed to staff these things as well. And, you know, so, you know, maybe we wouldn't have to recruit them from California or wherever.
Mr. Chair, Senator Cooley. Yes, and I would say not only us, but I think, you know, we work very closely with Minsku and they with us, and they have a major role to play in producing some of the skilled talent that's going to be necessary to make this work, as do we. So that's in process.
Okay, thank you.
We are going to have to move on. Minsku is next. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, next will be Minsku. Al Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, good morning. For the tape, I'm Alan Johnson, the Associate Vice Chancellor for Facilities at Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. I'll be using a handout. I'll just speak from the handout this morning that you have in front of you. Would like to acknowledge in the audience here today President Don Day from our college in Cloquet, Fond du Lac Tribal and Community College, and we have several other vice presidents and representatives from our colleges and universities here as well. This is a brief presentation on our 2007 capital budget request. And if you flip over to slide number 2, you see here that this helps address the situation at our 32 colleges and universities throughout the state, located on 53 campuses and serving in 46 separate communities. We educate Minnesota. We make it work. That's been our byline now for a couple of years. More than half the state's teaching graduates come from Minsku institutions, 78% of the nursing graduates, 92% of law enforcement officers, and so on. And to echo what Dr. Sierra said, many of these bioscience-type careers are also nurtured at virtually all our colleges and universities around the state. In context, on slide 4, you see we're about a third of the state building space. Although spread out around the state, if you added it all up together, you see we're dealing with about 26 million square feet, about one-third of the state's public building space. On slide 5, our capital budget request is summarized with a $30 million request for higher education asset preservation and replacement, or the HEPR account, to take care of the facilities that the state has entrusted to us, $3.8 million for property acquisition for a total request of $33.8 million. The bulk of the request on slide 6 is shown as the HEPR account. Major repairs and replacements. It's virtually our only source of funding to take care of existing facilities. It's the primary source that we've focused on in the last 8 to 10 years to reduce a backlog of deferred maintenance. It covers other things such as compliance with life safety and building codes, accessibility improvements to comply with the American Disabilities Act, abatement of hazardous materials, improving of indoor air quality, and essentially renewal for existing uses. No new construction, no programmatic changes in the HEPR account. Basically, take care of what we own. The projects for 2007, as you see on slide 7, we've categorized those into four major areas, $9.7 million for replacing roofs. These are roofs that are leaking, that are deteriorated, that are well beyond their life expectancy. Replacement of heating and cooling systems. Most of these systems are averaging 40 years old and are inefficient, obsolete, not doing the job that they need to. Fire protection improvements for $2.1 million. And then another category, which includes taking care of building envelope repairs, the moisture intrusion, structural repairs, elevator replacements, and things of that nature, for a total of $30 million. context of our request, I've summarized on slide number 8. As we were putting this request together this year, we looked first at our backlog, most recently estimated to be over $600 million. This being the off-cycle bonding year, we felt we had to look at what was funded in 06, and we appreciate that certainly appreciate that $40 million that was appropriated then. And we looked at the most critical things that should get that should continue here for our 2007 request. $100 million was what our request had been back in 06. $40 million was funded. About a third of that, I should tell you at this point, about a third of that $40 million is already under contract. So with less than under a year since the funds became available, we've got one-third of that under contract. And we will have, to keep our promise to you, we will have that full $40 million from last year all encumbered under contract within 24 months. That's been our promise. And, of course, the other urgent need in context is to prevent further backlog growth. There's some there's a lot of implications with the HEAPER type of work. I think that what has become more paramount here in recent years is there are a lot of energy conservation implications. There's no doubt that HEAPER funding saves energy. It's a little difficult to quantify sometimes, but we know when we replace a roof that we increase the insulation value. We exceed the state energy code, and we've got anecdotal evidence where we actually reduce the energy consumed in a building when it's got a new roof on it, not to mention keeping moisture intrusion out of that space as well. Certainly there's energy to be saved when we improve our mechanical systems, get efficient boilers, and particularly control systems. And then when you improve windows, doors, the building envelope, and all your systems, there's energy savings ahead.
You know, most of that list of projects you had last year were total renovations. Now, when we do a total renovation, that does cut into the backlog as well, does it not?
Mr. Chairman, that's correct. When you talk about the individual line item projects, yeah. the larger $10 million projects and things of that nature, we always look towards renovating and also taking care of backlog at the same time. Property acquisition on slide 10 is summarized. We have two requests this year. You saw these in 06. They were not funded in 06. We'd like you to reconsider them now for 08 for $3.8 million. We are working agreements with the sellers. We're much farther ahead this year than last. $1.8 million is a request for the Fond du Lac Tribal and Community College and $2 million for Bemidji State University. You see on slide number 11, it's an aerial of Bemidji State University. The heavy dotted line on the right-hand side of the slide is the property boundary line for the university. That's about 325 acres. And the property proposed for acquisition is the old Bemidji High School site shown there on the dotted line is parcels 1, 2, and 3. The $2 million would acquire the three parcels. It would add to the university's land holding and give them some breathing room, some room for growth, parking, and the like. This acquisition has been in and out and on and off the legislative calendars and our list for at least 8 years, and I think we're to the point in discussing with the school district that that this can be taken care of now.
Do you have the plans for what will go in here after a purchase?
Mr. Chairman, there's no immediate plan other than to clear the land and to make it to create it as a green space. The most immediate need would be for some overflow parking.
Okay. Yeah, the committee was on the campuses of both Fond du Lac and Bemidji, and we were given this request at that time. We just didn't get it done last year. In conference committee, the Senate had it, but it in conference committee.
Slide 12 is the Fond du Lac Tribal and Community College. It's a very small footprint, it's 39 acres, shown in the solid white line. The six properties shown on the south, on the bottom part of the boundary, were the properties that were requested last year. We had always said that it makes sense to acquire those properties because the campus is so small and it is growing. The enrollment is one of the fastest growing enrollments in the system. And it always made sense to acquire that property just to give the campus some boundary protection. Well, now it turns out, of course, is that we funded, or the legislature funded, the expansion of that college building, as you see there in that little circle called Cultural Center. That expansion will be taking place this summer, and it's right up to the very close to the boundary line. And frankly, those property owners would like to sell and get out of there before we start construction. And I think it's the right time to do that, to maintain our relations with the community, not only from the college perspective, but also from the state's perspective. And finally, the last page in the handout is the capital budget spreadsheet. You'll see it totals up to, on the back page, it totals up to $33.8 million, 30 in Heber and 3.8 in land. This is not a priority list. This is just listed alphabetically by the types of projects and where they where they'll take place throughout the state. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'm subject to your questions. That concludes my presentation.
Okay, any questions of the committee? And a roll, Blaine.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm wondering about the Bemidji campus expansion and about your enrollment growth. I thought Bemidji was a campus that was struggling to keep its enrollment up. Are you projecting growth on that campus that you would need additional space, or what would be the cause of acquiring more space?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Roebling, growth projection, the enrollment projections at Bemidji are modest, flat to modest. There's not any major growth involvement. It's the fact that Bemidji is landlocked in its placement in the city. Students are parking out in the community. This gives them the breathing room to create some additional parking, and as well as some future growth, perhaps for some student housing. At one point, we were looking at developing some student housing there and demolishing some of the older housing stock.
Well, now, you have moved the technical college on the same campus, haven't you, over a period of years?
Mr. Chairman, the technical college was moved administratively, first of all. President Quisgard is the president over both the State U as well as the Tech College. There has been more and more course program delivery overlap, not only on the university campus but also on the Tech College campus. But at this point in time, the two campuses remain where they are.
Okay. Senator Stump.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On the slide 12, is the property that's up in the upper right-hand corner, the dotted line, is that included in that purchase? Well,
Mr. Chairman, Senator Stump, thank you for reminding me. I forgot that. That is another parcel that just became available through an estate. The property owner passed away here about 4 months ago. This is what we'd say it is an opportunity that we may not have, or at least from a willing seller in the future. That's what that pretty much is bounded by 14th Street on the right and by the I-35 interchange on the left, and you can't see it, but also on the north. But that is part of the acquisition as well. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I was just, looking at the $1.8 million for land acquisition. And if you divide that out by the six residential properties, in your explanation, you don't mention that other one, but it comes to about $300,000 per piece of property, which seems a little high.
Mr. Chairman, Senator, if you include that other one, I think that one on the north is probably valued at about $250,000. We do have the ability to pay relocation costs. We would not pay more than appraised value, and so while it's an estimate at this point, that's what we're working against.
Those of you who haven't been on this campus, it is really unique. As you walk around in the building, basically under one roof, there's windows all around, so you can see out, and then there's trees. Just it's totally surrounded by evergreen trees, and it really is an amazing setting. I'm sure all 25 of you will be on tour this fall.
Marge would love that.
Okay. Thank you, Al. And we were going to allow, I guess there were some Minsky students that wanted to have a few minutes, so if they could speak now.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair and Senators. I'm Justin McMartin, the State Chair of the Minnesota State University Student Association.
And I'm Scott Formo, the State President of the Minnesota State College Student Association.
Thank you for the time today. Just real brief, because our association supports something different than what the system's requesting, we asked for the opportunity to speak on that real quick. We support a 2007 capital budget request of $73.8 million. The students believe that the first priority in capital spending is to take care of what we already have, the buildings that are already there. We support the $3.8 million in new acquisition of land, but this other $70 million will be used for the higher education asset prevention and repair, the HEPR funds. And that is from the $10 million, or the $110 million that was requested last year and wasn't received from that. And so that's where the students are standing on that. And there are buildings on our campuses right now across the state that are in dire need of repair, as Mr. Johnson was saying. Right now there's buildings with leaky roofs, old mechanical and electrical systems that may not be up to fire code, as well as fire sprinklers that need to be installed. And it's essential to our students to keep them safe in our buildings, to allow them to attend class at our campuses. The state needs to provide the funding so that the system is able to take care of the buildings already on our campuses, to ensure that the classrooms are used to educate our students, are up to the standards of the industries that they'll be going into. These HEPR projects also prolong the life of our existing buildings, reducing the need for any brand new buildings, and they may not be as exciting and interesting to fund, but they're necessary to keep the system running the way it is to ensure that our students are continuing to be educated at the level that is up to date with the academic environment that we're in. So thank you for the opportunity to speak on that briefly today.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, if I just may add one more comment. From a student's perspective, you know, last year the priority was $110 million in a funding request. $40 million of that was covered, and to try to make up the difference without the difference being made up, what we're looking at as students or what we would be anticipating is going to affect students in one of two ways. Either one, the projects aren't going to get done or completed, or two, Minsky is still going to need to move forward in working on these projects, but it's going to be at the cost of higher tuition and fees again, which is another issue in itself. Thank you.
Any questions of the committee? Thank you. Next week, we are going to deal with the Duluth project, referred to as the DEC. The governor did have that in his proposal, and then St. Cloud project as well. There were four requests for event centers which were connected with higher education last year. Two of them were funded, and two of them were not, and these are the two that were not funded. Okay. Meeting adjourned. Stone. Oh, that's what the stones are.